All right. So we're going to touch on just a little bit of theory. I know this is part that you just as soon skip, yet it's one of those fundamental elements of understanding probability and statistics that you really do need to know. And having, it's not that difficult. It just has a simple formula. But the concept itself is pretty basic. And I'll try to explain it as clearly as I can. The central limit theorem talks about the average or the mean value of say, a set of data, of any set of data. And it talks about the difference between the population and a sample. And so as I start, if I'm able to take just one sample, we know that it most likely comes from a value that is at the mean or close to the mean value, but it's likely also to some extent to not be that exactly that value. Now, if I take an average of, say, a sample of 5, the average value I calculate will likely be closer to the true mean value of the population than just any single individual point. And as I approach the entire population in my sample, say I have a population of 100 items and I measure 95 of them, the average value of that 95 is going to be very close to the true average value of the population. It's one of those reasons why so many statisticians want more samples, is that in order to get an accurate estimate, the best way to do that is just to measure the entire population. And so in statistics anyway, more samples is almost always better. There's a limit, and we'll talk about some of that stuff too. But let's take a look at the central limit theorem, which is going to be our friend for lots of different applications that we're going to talk about throughout the course. So a very basic formula. Let's break this down just a little bit. So there's a bit of terminology in here in a couple of terms. So this sigma x bar, this is the standard deviation of the averages, of the mean, of the average value, right? So if I'm creating a normal distribution and I take an average of that, of my sample, and I get my samples, I make a histogram, I calculate the mean, the x bar value. The variation about this x bar, let's say this is one standard deviation in each direction, is defined by this sigma x bar. All right, so this, the standard deviation of the average itself, not of the entire group, so the standard deviation of the whole population will be some other larger value. Let's see if I can change my... This is a trick I learned, is that if you draw a normal distribution, 99.7% of it is underneath plus or minus 3 standard deviation. So the tails drop off pretty dramatically at a plus or minus 3 standard deviation. So if the standard deviation of my mean value is going to be some smaller value than my population standard deviation, that's fine. So I have my population standard deviation, this wider value, that should be in green. I have the standard deviation of the average value, and it's defined by the square root of n. So the more samples I have, the closer those two numbers will come together. If I have the entire population, right? Well, I'm sorry, there's one other concept here. So this estimate, this range of variability, it comes from the concept that if I take another sample, right? If I draw 2-3 samples, and I calculate an X bar, I'll get a value, X bar 1. And if I take another sample, I'll get another value, X bar 2, and so on. And if I keep drawing samples and with replacement, and I will get slightly different calculations. Now, this range that these fall within is defined by this sigma x bar. It's the amount of variation from this, wherever the real value of the x bar or the mean value is. So if I'm taking a very high number of samples, this will be a very tight grouping. So if I'm taking, say, 100 samples, it'll be much, much tighter than if I'm divided by the square root of 10, then it'll be a much wider set of numbers. So hopefully that makes sense. You can play with the formula, but the basic idea is this is the standard deviation of the averages, and this is the standard deviation of the population. Now, likewise, if I'm dealing with a sample, I change the term to standard error about the mean. It's the same basic concept, but it's based on a sample average and the sample itself. So what's the variation, the standard deviation of the sample? It's this value, and the standard deviation of the average based on that sample. Once again, the more samples I have, the more consistent I'll get a standard deviation value from sample to sample to sample using the same population that I'm pulling from. So standard error of the mean is dealing with a sample set of data. The central limit theorem is based on the population type data, but it also has this characteristic that the mean values, the averages that I take from a population, will become normally distributed even if the underlying original distribution that I'm pulling the samples from is not. So it's what comes out of this is that I'm pausing, not just for effect, but because it is critically important. The ability of us to of the samples we take from a group become normally distributed, and the average values, I should say, of those samples becomes normally distributed. Now, the normal distribution is symmetrical, it's well characterized, it has lots of very useful features. And so when we take a sample and we average it, one of the things we commonly say, which is based on central limit theorem, is that we're smoothing out the noise. We're smoothing out the numbers. So instead of dealing with a erratic set of numbers that, say, five samples would give us average or values that would bounce around quite a bit. But if we take as individual points, but if I take an average of those five values, it will smooth out, and it has this tendency to become normally distributed. So let's take a look at how that works and see if I can draw this correctly. So let's say I start out, get my notes in the right place here so I can see them. Let's say I start out with something that is a triangle distribution. And this is a histogram, right? So I've got data that's skewed to the left. Most of my data is here and a few points over to the left. Now, if I draw individual samples from here, they'll tend to be in the area where it's most likely for them to occur, on the upper end of the scale. And that's fine. It may be what I'm looking for. But if I take individual samples from this and average, say, just two samples and average those, I'm going to get something that's a little bit lumpy, maybe skewed to the left a little bit, but it's a little bit smoother. Well, it's hard to be smoother than just a ramp and shut off there, but it starts to shift slightly. Now, if I take five samples, get something. It looks kind of like that. It's starting to take on that bell shape part. And let's say this is my mean value. X double bar is one way we say is the average of the averages. X double bar. And with 25 samples, I get something that, well, if you can draw a really good bell-shaped curve, it would look fairly normally distributed. Now, one thing I didn't draw correctly on here, let me back this up a little bit. Use the full width there. If I'm using two samples, I get this skewed thing. And if I use five samples, I get something like that. And if I use 25 samples, that'd be a symmetrical bell-shaped curve. But the values will tend to narrow down to what the true underlying population mean value is. But it'll become more and more symmetrical and more normally distributed the more samples I run. And that has a distinct advantage in a number of different applications, and we'll talk about some of those. All right, so let's take a look at another sample. Let's say I have something that's an exponential decay. All right, now if I take two samples, it's going to be a little bit tighter and still skewed. And if I take five samples, like that, a little bit tighter, and 25 samples, be normally distributed and even tighter. But the notion is that if I'm estimating the mean value, if I take 25 samples, the probability of the range of possible values given 25 samples from this starting distribution is going to be fairly close to the true standard deviation, mean value. But more importantly is that the error about this, the standard error about the mean, for example, is going to be very, very small. Whereas I take just one sample, it will run the gamut from high to low of our population, given the distribution that it has. So I'll get more points over here as individual points, but they will also include points with a finite probability off in the tail. And they will be over the entire range of those values, and unlikely to be very close to the true mean value. Whereas if I take even a sample of five, I reduce that error dramatically. But the secondary thing is that those averages, the values, the mean values I'm calculating from each group of samples, will tend to be normally distributed. So it's those symmetry and the interpretation of confidence intervals and probabilities and so on takes on a bunch of really known properties. Now, this becomes even more clear if I'm looking at a distribution that's really odd. Let's say it's got values on the high end and on the low end, but very few in the dead center. Now, the mean will still be here in the middle if I'm pulling enough samples from everywhere or across the whole population. But let's say I'm, instead of getting a value on one end and then the next value comes from over here, I can smooth this out slightly. We call that a bimodal distribution, by the way, or an odd distribution of some sort. But if I take just two samples, I'm going to get something that looks like this. It's kind of ugly in and of itself. And if I take five samples, I get something, if I can draw it correctly, not the smoothest bell-shaped curve, but more so. And I should be drawing these where they are brought in a bit in their error. And then if I take 25 samples, I get my relatively tight normal distribution again. Not the best artist here, so let me get rid of all that. But the idea is that if you create pretty much any distribution you want, and then start taking increasing numbers of samples and then average those and then plot those sample averages, it will start to look like a normal bell-shaped curve. And so one of the questions is where, I've mentioned this is useful a couple of times, and I've left this kind of as a quiz for you. And I did mention control charts at one point, but it is one of the ways, control charts is just one of the examples. So where else do you see the central limit theorem used in practice? Where else do you do averaging in order to use the properties of the normal distribution? And if anything comes to mind, let me know. But also keep an eye out for where we're going to run across this as we go through the rest of the lessons. In the next section, we're going to talk a little bit more detail about dispersion. I've mentioned standard deviation and already. There's a couple other ways that we measure dispersion. We'll talk about that next.